This is Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Catherine Loper.
And I'm Jason Smith. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is one resource available for those struggling with mental health issues or thoughts of suicide.
But it's not just the 800 number. You can text, you can find resources online, on their website, for professionals, loved ones, and more. We spoke to Associate Director of the Lifeline, Sherry Sinwelski, about the service. So, Sherry, can you tell me how your services have evolved over the years? How long has the Lifeline been in operation?
The Lifeline has been in operation for over 10 years in the United States. However, the crisis hotlines that make up the Lifeline have been in operation for much longer than that. Many of our crisis centers go back 30, 40, or even 50 years.
Those crisis Lifelines, do those feed into the Lifeline?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So the Lifeline is actually made up of crisis centers all across the country. Over 150 crisis centers in the United States are the backbone of the Lifeline. So when a caller dials our phone number, 1-800-273-8255, the call is routed to the center that is closest to them. Or if that center is unavailable for some reason, then we have a network of national backup centers that will take the call.
And a lot of people are familiar with that phone number because recently, earlier this year, some high-profile suicides, that phone number got a lot of attention. But your service is more extensive than that. Are there other ways people can reach out for help to you?
Yeah, we have our website, suicidepreventionlifeline.org, that has a lot of valuable resources on there, including a campaign called Be the One To, which is a campaign that helps people who may be trying to be a support to someone who they care about who's at risk for suicide. We also have a chat program as well.
Oh, a chat program online?
That's right.
Can you tell us a little bit about the people on the other side of the line who are there to help?
It really depends from community to community because each crisis center operates independently, but they've all been through similar training. We have best practices that they must meet in terms of suicide risk assessment, as well as making decisions when a caller may be at imminent risk. So if a person is in immediate danger, we have specific guidelines that they must train their counselors on so that everybody is meeting the same standards for determining when a person may be at risk. Just for how to talk to somebody who's thinking about suicide, it can be a topic that is hard for some people to talk about if they haven't been through that particular training. And so we provide best practices for them to talk about the issue in a way that's very collaborative, that's very sensitive to the fears that a person might be experiencing if they're thinking about suicide.
And are these volunteers or some of them or all of them licensed professionals?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's what I was saying when I said it depends on which center they're reaching. Each center is independently owned and operated. So some of them are primarily staffed by volunteers. In other communities, they may have primarily paid staff who are on the line. And in some centers, they have a combination of both. They've all been trained in the same best practices.
So let's talk about some of those practices. When somebody calls the Lifeline when they're in distress or they're considering suicide or having suicidal thoughts, what happens when somebody calls? How confidential are those conversations? And what are those conversations like? I'm sure they vary.
Yeah, they do vary. But I think, you know, one of the first things that always happens is that the counselor just tries to connect with the person on a basic human level, listens to what it is that's going on. A lot of time when people are thinking about suicide, they haven't been able to talk about it with anybody. They've been perhaps fearful, or maybe they don't have anyone in their lives that is able to talk about the topic. And so the first thing that they do is just to try to connect, let them know that they're not going to judge them, that the topic is something that they're not afraid of talking about. They're going to want to learn more about the situation. Most people who think about suicide actually never act on their thoughts. And so one of the things that a person who answers the line is trying to determine is this person having thoughts of suicide, or has it escalated to something that's even more serious where they might be starting to think about acting on those thoughts, in which case they're going to try to come up with a plan to keep them safe. So, you know, what can this person do to make sure that they're going to be in a safe situation? Most of the calls that come into the line are de-escalated once the person has had a chance to talk with the counselor for a while. They're usually able to say, you know what, I'm feeling a lot better now, and are able to agree to some type of action to keep themselves safe.
Is there ever a time, though, where the counselors on your end of the line might have to alert law enforcement or first responders?
There are times when a person may be worried about the caller who's called in. If they think that that person can't stay safe, then they're going to try to find some way to do that. I was mentioning to you earlier that all of our centers must train their counselors on our imminent risk guidelines. And those are the guidelines that determine what does a counselor do if a person's in immediate danger. One of the key foundations of our imminent risk policy is the concept of collaboration. And what I mean by that is that even if a person determines that the caller may not be safe, they're going to try to work collaboratively with them to come up with a way to keep themselves safe. And there's lots of things that can be done collaboratively to avoid having to call somebody out to the person's home. Perhaps they might be willing to go see a counselor willingly, or perhaps they might be able to go to their local crisis unit if they have one in their community, or to their emergency department. We really try, first and foremost, to always use what we call the least intrusive intervention. That being said, on occasion, there are times where a call might be so dangerous that we do need to have some sort of immediate intervention. And if a person is unable or unwilling to do that, we may have to call whatever crisis services are available in their community.
As somebody who's on the front lines of trying to combat suicide, do you see it as a public health issue? And what do you think we as a society need to be doing more of to prevent this?
We definitely approach the topic of suicide as a public health issue. And I really believe that there's many layers that need to be in place in a community to prevent suicide, both in local communities and nationally. Education is really important, making sure that everybody is familiar with what are the warning signs for suicide. And not only what are those warning signs, but what can I do if I find myself worried about somebody? Oftentimes, people who are thinking about suicide are going to go to those closest to them first, so their families or their friends. So it's important that everybody's educated on those issues and knows how to intervene and get them to some higher level of care. It's also important that there's structures and places and communities so that when a person is in crisis, that there's services available for them. So that means, really strong crisis services, including mobile crisis, funding of crisis hotlines, and even ongoing treatment if that's what the person needs.
Well, we really appreciate you explaining how the service works and how this ongoing crisis is being addressed by you and by others. Thanks again.
Thank you.